Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. In 2020, Latinos became the largest minority voting bloc in the country. And as votes were tabulated last week, one thing that was demonstrated was the power of the Latino vote. It contributed to President Donald Trump winning Florida, but it also helped President-elect Joe Biden flip a historically red state like Arizona. The 2020 election has forced some to pause and reflect on the use of the term Latino vote. The election results could serve as proof that Latino voters don't act as a monolithic voting bloc, and the term can be misleading. WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar spoke to Dr. Stephanie Rivera-Berruz about the term Latino vote, and she begins by explaining the complexities about the makeup of the Latino demographic.
The term Latino, or Latina or Latinx, as some of us might have heard it, is a pan-ethnic label. And it's a label that is intended to capture both race and ethnicity in certain respects, as well as a kind of broad-reaching country of origin. So when we're talking about what it means to be Latino in the United States, we're really referring to a very complex and wide range of identities that have arrived or have been in what we refer to as the continental United States in very different ways. And their relationships to the United States are also just as complex as their stories of existence in relationship to the U.S. So in broadly speaking terms, Latino seems to capture everything and nothing at the same time. And as one of the things we're seeing with this election is that those complexities are all the more crystallized as we're trying to track political and civic engagement.
These levels of complexity include level of education, the generational divide, socioeconomic status within that large demographic. And I'm hoping if you could speak to the complexity right here in Milwaukee. What does the Latino population look like?
So Milwaukee, Wisconsin is a really interesting place in terms of its racial diversity and ethnic diversity because it is a what we call majority-minority city. It is a city that by raw numbers has more people of color than it does white people. However, you would never know this if you looked at who's in power and who really runs the city of Milwaukee. Right, the diversity of Milwaukee is not necessarily represented across the board. And so what we see in Milwaukee is that we have a very large community that is predominantly Mexican. But I want to be quick to note that when I say it's predominantly Mexican, that doesn't mean that everyone is from the same place in Mexico or that they arrived to the United States under the same types of conditions, even if they have the same country of origin. Again, showing the complexity of these types of experiences. And then this is further juxtaposed to a very large Puerto Rican population that also has a complex relationship with their arrivals to Milwaukee, if we're just thinking about Milwaukee specifically. And you also have the presence of people from other parts of Central America and the Caribbean present here, even if they're not necessarily part of the majority. So here I'm thinking of folks from Costa Rica. I'm thinking of folks from El Salvador. I'm thinking of people from the Dominican Republic. I'm thinking about people from Cuba. And this is just of the cross-section of people that I've met, right? There's, I'm sure, many, many more. But they might not rise to the level of noticing or legibility because they're numerically just not as present. But that doesn't mean they're not here. And that's an important thing to remember as we're thinking about how people vote.
You touched briefly on how someone's country of origin can influence or impact the relationship with the United States. And I'm wondering if you could just speak personally as a Puerto Rican woman, how has that impacted your relationship to being a citizen of the United States or your civic duty when participating in elections?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, because I think, I mean, my personal case, but what I'm about to say will also, I think, speak to something broader, is that how we understand people's relationship to voting generally is also a complex story. And so we can't not appreciate those complexities, right? And so with the case of Puerto Rico, for instance, I have a really complicated relationship to voting because I know that even though I currently reside in the continental United States, and I know that my vote in particularly in these elections in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, have great impact and matter, I also know that this may not actually have a good consequence for the place that I come from, which has been and continues to be occupied, colonially occupied by the United States. Does that mean I didn't go vote? No. But does it mean that I have the same type of experience as other people might to the engagement with voting? Yes, right? And these are parts of the complexities that I think this election, just generally speaking across the board, really missed to see on all fronts. And these are the complexities of what it means to be Latino in the United States. And so from my personal position, right, what it means to vote for me is very complicated by the fact that I come from a place that has never known sovereignty. So I don't know what it's like to vote under free and sovereign conditions.
Of course, the reason we are having this conversation is because as votes were counted last Tuesday evening, many pundits were baffled by the fact that there was a large turnout for Trump, especially among Latinos in the Rio Grande Valley region in Texas. Now, Stephanie, can you speak to that? Because I really feel that that exemplifies just how these political campaigns can miss the mark when trying to garner the quote-unquote Latino vote.
Yeah, so the case of the Rio Grande Valley, I think, is one that I think merits further attention in a way that I think a lot of the conversations around Florida, I think, are actually being centered more than what happened in Texas from the stuff I've been reading. And so what happens in the Rio Grande Valley is the construction of the border with it engenders the construction of military patrolling of the border and law enforcement that coincides with the construction of the border. We're also talking about a region that has been historically disenfranchised economically, such that we find ourselves in 2020. And I think a lot of people forget that those who are employed by Border Patrol and those that are employed by police are also Latino and have a very complicated relationship to military and police. And so if you have a narrative that's circulating about being more critical towards police, well, folks who work in these industries, even if they are Latino, are going to hear concern for their jobs first and foremost. And yet that doesn't seem to rise to the level of legibility, particularly from the Biden campaign, right? That didn't really appreciate the fact that a good chunk of Border Patrol staffing is Latino. Whether we like that fact or not, this is where there are jobs in areas that are very, very poor otherwise. And so a failure to attend to that meant that the Trump campaign could certainly capitalize on those anxieties, right? The anxieties to have a job, which is an anxiety that everyone in this country currently has. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. Of course, we're anxious about our jobs. What more could we not be anxious about, right? On top of the fact that maybe we might not live to work in those jobs, right? If that's not the concern, then it's the concern about the job itself.
Should we still be saying the Latino vote?
Excellent question. So I think we really need to be honest about what it is that we're trying to track with racial and ethnic markers vis-a-vis voting blocks. And this election and the last election and the election before that, right? Elections in general tell us a lot about how these terms relate to each other. And what we're obviously seeing is that there isn't necessarily a correlation between how we're thinking about the racial and ethnic term Latino and the behavioral patterns that we anticipated with political and civic engagement. And so if we want those things to actually be tracking what's happening on the ground, then we might need to really reconsider what it is we're trying to capture with these terms, right? Just like we capture them with, say, the white vote, where we're always doing cross-sections about what it means to be white, educated, lives in urban spaces, doesn't live in urban spaces, has college education, right? These factors seem to matter when we're thinking about something like the white vote. But when we're talking about the Latino vote or the Black vote, they're just these conglomerates of ethnic and racial labels. But it's not clear that we have a good grasp on what they're intended to capture.
So what I'm hearing from you is not that we need to abolish the language of Latino vote, but maybe we need to add more layers of complexity and descriptors to that. So what do you think is a better way forward?
I think we really need to appreciate the fact that all politics is place-based politics. So race is always going to be meaningful in how we think about political engagement, but how race operates in its context or how ethnicity needs to appreciate the places in which people are engaging. So the fact that Milwaukee is hyper-segregated matters for how we're going to try and predict how people are going to vote, right? The fact that the Rio Grande Valley is economically disenfranchised needs to be part of how we think about how people in those places will vote. And so we need to appreciate the importance of place for how race and ethnicity function as we're thinking about voting, particularly in the context of how people engage with politics and whether or not they're willing to vote in the first place.
Dr. Stephanie Rivera Berruz, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Dr. Stephanie Rivera Berruz is a social and political philosophy professor at Marquette University. She spoke with WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar.